Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this Thursday, November 14th. Travis, I'm not doing well in the bonanza. We'll get back on track, hopefully.
Forgive me if I have a little faith right now that you're going to get back. The streak that you're on is impressively bad, so I'm wondering.
Well, it's actually, the record's not terrible. It's just the big chunk plays, so to speak, have been not played back in live.
I think that's, I trust Jason Garrett more than I do you right now.
Oh, that's below the belt. Yeah, a lot of interesting decisions from Garrett and across the NFL. A lot of you reacting on Twitter with Kicking for Losers and all that fun stuff. We're going to get into that momentarily with John Murray, and I'll tell you who is red hot. White hot is Mike Clay. 5-0 last week with his prop bets, Travis.
Wasn't he undefeated the week before, too?
I think he went like 3-1 or 4-1 or something like that. So, and he said, actually, before last week's pod, that now that we are this juncture of the season, we have enough data and data. Remember, we made that joke that much easier to forecast, so to speak, and prognosticate with the target shares, all that stuff. It's easier to kind of handicap the props.
I'm just going to follow his lead.
Maybe I'm going to be doing that in the bonanza. We'll get to all that straight ahead.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Man, we had some options last weekend, and it is fun that, you know, you don't even need to watch the games. You just get blown up on your Twitter feed whenever something happens.
Yeah, anytime there's a terrible decision to punt or kick a field goal, somebody tweets about it. So there's no point in watching these games. There's no need to. Yeah, somebody will let us know when a funny moment occurs.
You seem very cranky with the NFL. You call soccer and other things real sports.
Oh, I love soccer. I think the NFL is like a cartoon at this point. It's just like everyone just standing around waiting for the referees to make a decision.
It is pretty remarkable how we have not advanced certain things. I mean, whether it be the spotting of the football, some of the decisions with replay, and you know, the call stands should like not be an option. It should be this was the right call or this was not.
Did you see the one? I forget what game it was, but some receiver, I think it was the Lions game. He got tackled and he just placed the ball like 2 yards forward. And
yeah,
they just
hurry up
it there. Yeah. Are you guys serious? No one noticed that? Because every time they do that, they all put the ball down a few yards ahead. It's the referee's responsibility to then put it back at the correct marker. No one bothered to do that. They just kept going. Or how about in the Seattle-San Francisco game, the Monday night game, which actually really was a really good game, they got the coin toss call wrong. I think it was Geno Smith said tails, and they said, oh, it's heads, and they gave Seattle the ball.
Sure. I disagree with that. They got it wrong. I think they got it right.
Really?
How is that possible? Well, first of all, he says heads, and the referee repeats it. He's like, okay, you called heads. If he was so against it and if it was so wrong, wouldn't he have said something?
I guess.
And I heard the audio, and I disagreed with the uproar, so to speak.
But there's still funny moments in the NFL. I thought it was funny when Jason Garrett kicked a field goal down by a touchdown in the fourth quarter. I thought Kyle Shanahan really blew it. You know, he had to run the ball at least one time on that last drive. Seattle didn't have any timeouts, so he could have basically made it impossible for Seattle to win the game and made it so that a worst-case scenario was a tie.
He still
could have gone for the win, but if you run the ball one time, Seattle can't win, and now your worst-case scenario is a tie. And he's got that lead in the division and in the conference.
And the run could have been a big run, too, and it could have been a success.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I do think
it's
he called
like
short
a, like
pass
kneel
plays,
down.
And I got a drop on first down. I think the plan was to do a pseudo run with that first pass play. I think that was the thought process, that the pass play was so conservative. Then again, his guys have been dropping balls all night, so he should have adjusted on that front.
What was up with that? I feel like the Seattle defenders dropped as many balls as the 49ers receivers. Nobody could catch a football in that game.
Yeah, I mean, really bizarre way to – you can look at it different ways. Like, obviously, you and I had the Niners, and we could have been like, well, the drops. But then also the Seahawks defenders. I want to go back to Sunday night. So I'm trying to think. So you mentioned it. So we'll start there. But I want to go back to earlier in the game. So you said with 10 minutes to go, fourth and goal on the five, you mocked Jason Garrett for kicking.
I would have gone for it. Yeah.
And I guess my point is I wouldn't fault either decision. I was okay kicking it. Because I think the funniest is when you can assume no other scores, then that's when it's like most egregious. Like Pat Narduzzi with the Pitt game earlier in the season. Like it was like four minutes to go.
That one was absolutely ridiculous. I would never compare the Jason Garrett one to that one.
Correct.
That might be the worst field goal decision.
Right.
Yeah, that could be the worst field goal decision I've ever seen.
Correct. So I was using that as an extreme example. And then there's like, I felt like this was a 6-1 way, half a dozen the other, whatever your personal preference is, because there was 10 minutes to go. But that's my opinion. I can't fault you for wanting to go for it either.
Well, I thought I had a play on the Browns as well, and I thought they absolutely did the right thing going for it on fourth and goal. They didn't get it, but they did go for it on fourth and goal, and I thought it was the correct thing to do. A touchdown there would have put them up by two touchdowns. There's no way I would have kicked an 18-yard field goal from the 1-yard line. So I do think that Freddie Kitchens was right there. It just didn't work out for him.
Let's go to earlier in the Cowboys game. Opening drive, fourth and six, I want to say, for the Cowboys on the 40-yard line. He kicks a 57-yarder.
Well, that that's even worse than punting.
I agree.
I would go for it there. But if I wasn't going to go for it, I would probably just punt the ball. The field goal, it's such a low chance of making it. And if you miss it, you give Minnesota such good field position. Why don't these teams value field position more? It doesn't seem like it's something that they even consider when they're making their decisions.
Well, and sometimes they value it too much. I think possession is more important. Like they punt and they value the 24 yards on the punt. So I'm with you. I had the under, okay? And I wanted him to make the field goal.
Yeah. Okay.
So like,
I get it.
Because I think if you make it, then it's 3-0, sort of sets the tone, and it just feels like more of an under bet. I don't know. Maybe that's just crazy talk because it's also 3 points against my total. Rather, I was very – well, first of all, I wanted him to punt. I was very upset when he was lining up for the 57-yard. It just makes – it was fourth and six on the Minnesota 39.
On the 39, just go for it. I guarantee you, if you're the Vikings, what are you hoping they don't do? You don't want them to go for it, right? So go for it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. If I'm Mike Zimmer, I think the number one thing I want them to do is kick a field goal.
Well, I definitely don't want them to go for it. Right. I would say field goal would be my hope there. But it's just typical Jason Garrett. You know, I did a show with Matt Eumanns on Sunday night, and obviously you know Matt very well, and he said that you know, Jason Garrett's not calling the plays. All he has to do is make between 3 and 5 critical decisions per game, and he gets almost every one of those decisions wrong on the in-game. He's just not a good in-game coach.
The maddening thing is on these – I mean, I've seen it in workplaces where I've worked in the past and throughout my life. When you sort of, like, avoid the difficult decision, you really just make life so much harder and – on top of that, obviously, it's a counterproductive situation. So he's literally botching, he being Jerry Jones, the Cowboys championship window. Mm-hmm. Now, he goes and makes a trade midseason and goes chips all in, but then he does this. I love the OC change that he did in the offseason, but you're just not putting – you're not optimizing across the board. You're only doing it in some situations.
Dallas has a really good roster. The people in their front office that are drafting for them have done an excellent job.
Correct.
But they don't have the right coach in place. They just have the coach that Jerry Jones likes. And I think because of that, their ceiling is only so high. They're not going to win a championship with Jason Garrett as their head coach.
Well, you never know. He won it with Barry Switzer.
No, you know, well, that true, but that team was like, this is a talented Dallas team. That team in 95 was just loaded beyond belief.
Correct. I was more making a joke about the past.
No, I know what you're saying, and we have seen teams win championships with less than outstanding head coaches, but I don't know that Dallas's talent level is so high They also don't have an elite quarterback. They have a good quarterback, but they don't have an elite quarterback. And with Jason Garrett at coach, I don't think they have enough to actually win a championship. I think their ceiling is pretty much what they did last year, which is to win the division, win a wild card game, and then lose in the second round.
Sounds about right. Okay, let's turn the page. Let's go to this weekend. I know there's some intriguing games. Let's start with the Browns, who you pushed with on the, in the baby bankroll bonanza, hosting the Steelers, mm-hmm. a team that burned me with the Rams. I just can't get behind the Steelers team at all. But it sounds like you have the solid three here.
What do you think of the job Mike Tomlin's done in Pittsburgh? I mean, I would argue one of the more underrated coaching jobs this year in the NFL that I don't hear a lot of people talking about. You know, he loses Roethlisberger. They lost Rudolph for a few weeks, too. They're down to their third-string quarterback. He's really kept that group together. They're 5-4 right now.
I think he's been incredibly under the radar. And I have a guy, I'm a guy who's been critical of Tomlin in the past, especially because
so have I.
Yeah, he's succeeded really only with, like, Dick LeBeau and we need the right coordinators, and then they've been kind of underachieving. But with all that being said, I don't really know what he's coaching, what he's not. I do know he has the command of the locker room, and that goes a long way, especially when you have that big of a locker room. So there's a lot of good there. He's botched every challenge, but some of that is what it is. But it is kind of funny how he can't win a challenge, although I think he did win one in the last game. All that being said, yeah. How he's kept this team on, you know, together and move and doing in a position to make the playoffs is remarkable.
Well, there's no doubt. And, you know, the Ravens have kind of run away with that division. But I think I read that the Steelers right now, if the season ended today, would be the number 6 seed in the AFC playoffs.
That is crazy.
It really is. They're a team to really keep an eye on next year, by the way. If they get Roethlisberger back healthy, they've got a lot of good young pieces on defense. You know, people kind of rolled their eyes when they traded a first-round pick to the Dolphins for Minkah Fitzpatrick. But it kind of makes sense. Minkah Fitzpatrick's 22 years old. He's under a rookie contract for the next 3 years after this year, and he plays a position they really needed. It's hard to imagine they would have gotten a player that valuable wherever they're picking in the first round in 2020.
Fair enough. And, yes, the Steelers would be a playoff team over the Colts and Raiders based on a win percentage in conference games and then also a head-to-head sweep based with Indy. So they beat Indy at home, remember, a couple weeks ago. So you guys have the line at 3 here. Any handle, any action? What are we looking at?
Well, it's a pretty public dog play on Pittsburgh. I know you love those, but the public dogs did great last week. So it's about 3.5-1 ticket count on the Steelers here. We did, as we were recording this morning, a guy came in. He bet Browns -150 on the money line for $30,000 to win $20,000. So a little bit of money is showing up on Cleveland, but the ticket count pretty firmly on the Steelers right now.
That's interesting. Any bonanza for you with the Browns? Is it a good spot again?
I don't think so. I just don't trust that team. I don't understand why their offense is so bad with all the players they have on that offense. I know their O-line is nothing special, but they just have playmakers everywhere on offense. I don't understand how they can't move the football with more consistency. I got to think it's because of Freddie Kitchens. I don't know what else it could be.
Well, I think Mayfield's come back to earth a little bit, too, because
fair.
Just he's not pulling the trigger on throws, too. Like sometimes these guys are open. It's not all on Kitchens, right?
Yeah. No, that's true. But he did engineer a pretty good drive at the end of the game last week to beat Buffalo. That was another great ref moment. Did you see the play where Mayfield shoveled the ball forward? Clearly a incomplete pass, and the Bills picked it up and ran it in for a touchdown, and we had to go through the whole formality of reviewing the play and stopping the game. I mean, it wasn't even a question that it was a shovel pass. What are they doing?
They got to move the second time slot kickoff to like 5 p.m. Eastern just to budget in all the replay reviews and stuff. Yeah, I got no opinion tonight. I mean, I can't lose any more money fading the Steelers, so I'm just going to stop. But I just can't buy into them right now. I just can't. I just think Rudolph's garbage, and if there's ever a week, it's not going to happen. But you trust a team like Pittsburgh with Tomlin to kind of keep these guys together on the short week. And if there's a team that can pull it off, it's this sort of squad, but I'm over it.
Yeah, that's a fair point, but I don't – you know what? I don't trust either of these teams, so I'm going to sit this one out as well.
That's fair. Okay, let's go to Sunday. Dallas at Detroit, obviously no Matthew Stafford last week. What are we looking here?
Well, we don't have a lineup on the game in the book, but we do have a line. We had to make a line for the Super Contest, and you know how that goes. We made it 6.5 on the Cowboys because we don't think Matthew Stafford's going to play. Now, we've guessed wrong a few times this year with Patrick Mahomes, but just what I was reading is that he's got broken bones in his back. Mm. It's just so hard for me to believe that he would play this weekend. I know he's a tough guy, but got to think he's out. And we think the number's close to a touchdown with Jeff Driskel in there, quarterback for the Lions.
That's interesting. Because Driskel, I mean, we talked about the Bears last week. It could have been a good spot for them just because they've made some teams. Like, remember the Vikings you mentioned that went in there and couldn't even get a first down at Soldier Field. I think it's a little bit more inviting to take the home team plus 6.5 if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
But, man.
We'll need Detroit. I mean, there's no betting on the game, obviously. But when eventually we'll put this game up, Dallas will be like a touchdown-ish favorite, and Dallas will be a very popular road favorite, along with the next game we're about to talk about, which I think is going to be the most popular play in the morning.
Yeah, we'll get to that momentarily. But you mentioned the Super Contest. How's Tuca been doing since we jinxed him?
I think he had like a – I think he went 2-3 last week. There was a new guy that took the lead, Bud Fox. I'm not sure where he got that alias from. But he went 0-3 in the morning, and then he had the Sunday and Monday night games. So it seems like whoever goes up to the top, they just start to fall. But there are some very funny aliases out there, which I respect.
Yeah, so there was Blue Horseshoe for a while. I remember that was a popular one. So now it's just Bud Fox, just straight Bud Fox.
That guy was Bud Fox, yeah. It's a good one. Tuco's a really funny one, too. A lot of good ones out there.
So you mentioned the road favorite's probably going to be the highest ticket count ratio, so to speak. Saints at the Bucs.
Yeah, New Orleans will be Tampa Bay, will be a very big need for all the books around town. Right now it's about a 7-1 ticket count on the Saints. They're laying 5.5. The Saints are off of a terrible loss. The bounce back needed here for New Orleans. Drew Brees needs a big game, I think. He really struggled last week after Bridgewater did such a good job. I'm not saying I think Drew Brees' job is in danger, but he could certainly use a good game to right the ship. Tampa Bay will be a big need for all the books in Nevada.
So I had a range of emotions on Sunday. I've never won an eliminator pool. I've been down to 4 out of like 200 or something ridiculous. It was 6 of us left. I had the Saints. Mm-hmm. Was not happy about it, but I got a lifeline. There was one guy left who had the Colts, and if they lost, then we all advance. And sure enough, we're back, baby.
Well, what a day for the books. I mean, the Falcons beating New Orleans, that was our biggest winner of the year to date in the NFL. I mean, just every money line parlay got killed in that game. And then Miami beats the Colts. We won huge on that game, too. And even another game in the morning, Tennessee beating Kansas City, that was one of our most lopsided ticket counts of the year. So that the dogs really had a huge week in the NFL, and it led to great returns for, I'm sure, all the sportsbooks around the country.
Win one for the bad guys. Jeez, you guys cleaned up.
Yeah, it was a good one. I mean, I'll tell you what, we gave back a lot of it on Monday night, if that makes you feel any better. But
no, it doesn't, because I was on the Niners.
Sunday was a very good day for the sports books. If you didn't make money on Sunday as a bookmaker, I think you need to find another profession, because it was a pretty easy day. Just let the public bet all the favorites and then watch all the underdogs win. Pretty easy.
Have you taken any sharp action on the Bucs here?
No, nothing that I would label as sharp in this game. Just a lot of public money coming in on the Saints, that's all.
So that's my next question. Do you think it'll go up, this line?
I wouldn't be surprised at all if we did see this number go up, because I know that all the books are going to be stuck on this game. You might see some rogue 6, 6.5s on Sunday morning from some of the books that want to get off a little bit of their liability. I will say we did see some sharp groups coming in under 51.5. Early in the week. But that number's gone. The total now 49.5 here.
Why not just get to 7 then? If you think that's when the sharps get in.
But this is why we won so much money last week. I mean, you're okay taking these positions. You're not trying to balance the books necessarily. You're just trying to book at the right market numbers, book to the right people, and then the results will come to you. And what happened last Sunday is a perfect example, right? Like, in theory, we could have gone to Titans plus 7 and taken back a ton of money on the Titans, but all we would have done is cost ourselves money when they won the game outright.
Okay, so a couple questions, because if you have no sharp money, then you say you want to just book to the right number. But who's to say the right number is 5.5? I guess that's my point, because earlier in the season, the Bears...
The whole market's at 5.5 right now, every single book. So, I mean, I got to trust. You got to trust the market in these things.
Right. So,
like, I don't believe in forcing decisions. You just let the people bet.
Correct. So earlier in the year, Bears, Raiders in London, that line steamed up. So what constituted that line going up and not this one?
I can't remember exactly how the betting was in that game. There must have been some play that was respected either here or in the marketplace on Chicago. Okay. But I don't remember exactly, to be honest with you. I mean, if we start to see the whole market go to 6.5 on New Orleans, then we would go to 6.5 on New Orleans. There's obviously other books offshore that take bigger limits than we do. So there's sharper money that's going into those places, and we're going to keep an eye on that. But even as I say that, I see Pinnacle drop into 5 right now.
Okay. I guess that's my question, is how do bookmakers operate when you don't have sharp money on that one side and you just have
right, so that is a good question
side.
Because
that was sort of what I was getting to.
When we have a really respected play from a really respected player, we will book to need that person's side. But when there's nothing like that in the pool, you just stick to the market number. And you just let the public bet into that number. And you assume that in the long run you'll win, because you will.
Gotcha. Okay. You just trust that number, that's sort of equilibrium.
I trust the market. I think it's very, very hard to beat the market. And I think it's extremely hard to beat the market in NFL sides. Yeah, for sure.
I agree. I guess I was talking about more the process of setting that market number. Because I think throughout the week it's kind of like, we're not sure yet.
Well, the arbitrage players kind of shape that for you. They can't help themselves. They're betting every game until everyone basically has the same number. Because if there's any differences at all, they bet both ways and kind of shape the whole market into the same numbers everywhere.
Okay. So let's go to the next game. Atlanta 2-5 ATS the past two seasons off an outright win. So here they are, the big win, and then now they're going to Carolina.
Yeah, watching that Atlanta game last week, my first thought was, how in the world did this team ever start 1-7? I mean, it's just crazy that could ever happen. Not a whole lot on this game here. We've got Carolina -5.5. There's really not much money on either side. This really looks to be one of the more low-volume games on Sunday morning, I think, kind of just buried in the deck. Not quite as bad of a game as the big Jets-Redskins matchup, but... a very low-volume game on Sunday morning here.
Okay, let's talk about that Jets-Redskins game. You have the Washington football team -1 mm-hmm. and a half.
We're at 1.5 here. We actually used 1 on the Super Contest because we think there's a decent chance it's going to come down a little bit. I mean, who's looking to bet on the Redskins? Dwayne Haskins starting at quarterback for Washington. The Jets showed some signs of life last week, but their coach is still Adam Gase. I don't know. I really don't know how you get involved here. If I had to, I'd probably play the Jets because I think Dwayne Haskins is in way over his head. But I don't see myself getting involved on this game.
Jacksonville, Indy, Colts lose to the Dolphins, amazingly.
Yeah, the Dolphins need a bench Fitzpatrick before he costs them a top 2 pick, man. They're pretty frisky. This is one I know you're going to like this. Everyone's betting the Jaguars here. So it's about over a 6-1 ticket count on Jacksonville. The dog here, Nick Foles starting for Jacksonville. We're expecting Jacoby Brissett to be back for the Colts. It's actually a pretty interesting game in the AFC South. I'd probably lean to the Colts here just because I'm seeing everybody coming in on Jacksonville.
Me too. What's the status of T.Y. Hilton?
Yeah, T.Y. Hilton's another guy we got to keep an eye on this week.
Because they lost to the Raiders at home earlier this year without Hilton, but with Brissett.
Yeah, I mean, the last update is he's out indefinitely, so you got to think he's not going to go.
Okay, so let's keep it going. Minnesota, we got our first double-digit spread of the conversation. We got a couple here on the card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know about this one.
Minnesota's been such a good team at home. Yeah. They've just blown people away at home. 10.5-point favorite, very lopsided take count on Minnesota. That's nothing really eye-opening. They're a huge favorite, so the public's going to bet all over them. Minnesota is going to be in every moneyline parlay and probably a very common survivor pick this week, I would think.
Yeah, you know, I'm down between them and the Raiders. I'm actually leaning Oakland.
Yeah, Boy, Oakland, we got some fun talking points when we get down to that Oakland game. I think there's a lot to talk about with the Raiders.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to there in a moment. Let's actually go there right now. I actually think this number is going to close like 13.
The Bengals are just a disaster. You know, we had a lot of there was a lot of sharp play on the Bengals before the game last week. That didn't work out too well. That was really the only game we really got crushed on Sunday. We lost on the Packers-Panthers game, but we lost a lot on the Ravens-Bengals game. Ravens blew the Bengals away. Lamar Jackson's juking like six defenders by himself in the open field. The Raiders, though, I mean, they're a 10.5-point favorite on Sunday. They get them to 6-4 if they win. We've got them on a look-ahead line as a 3-point favorite at the Jets next Sunday. They've got games down the line at home against the Titans, at home against Jacksonville. They play at Denver. They play at the Chargers in a game where probably be more Raiders fans there than Chargers fans. This team might make it to the playoffs, DK. What do you think of that, man?
I recommended a week ago that plus 450 to win the division was a play.
We got a prop up. We opened it no minus 160 for the Raiders to make the playoffs. We put that back up this week. We took some money on the no. So right now we're at no minus 190. Yes, plus 160. Will the Raiders make it to the playoffs? And the fact that that's even something we're talking about here on November 14th is a huge compliment to John Gruden and the staff, Derek Carr. The whole Raiders organization deserves credit. They're probably going to be 6-4 on Sunday.
Yeah, they've been very impressive. Just
I know
that we talked about that schedule and how long they were going to be away from home.
You lose Jonathan Abram, first-round pick out of Mississippi State, opening night. You know, the whole thing with Antonio Brown, the situation with Vontaze Burfict, and John Gruden has kept the whole thing together. A brutal schedule first half of the season. And like I just said, that schedule really opens up for them in the second half. They got a real shot to make it to the playoffs. It's crazy.
You guys have the Raiders plus 375 to make to win the division.
To win the division. Yeah, I mean, you still got to favor Kansas City.
Right.
Obviously, to win the division, but there's so much more depth in the NFC than the AFC. Like we mentioned earlier in the show, that Pittsburgh right now is in sixth in the AFC. That says a lot about the lack of depth in the AFC. A real shot here for Oakland to potentially, if they don't win the division, also have a crack at one of those two wild card spots. It's not like Buffalo is unbeatable.
Right, and they could win the. I mean, they could win at Kansas City. I mean, if Mahomes is not, sure. I mean, remember, he's re-aggravated this ankle injury a couple of times before the dislocated kneecap. There's no guarantee he's back and fine the rest of the way. So that's a concern I have.
Yeah.
Right.
They could win the division, and they could get a wild card, too. There's multiple paths here for Oakland to get back to the postseason.
You just mentioned the Bills. They're laying 6.5 at Miami. The red-hot Miami Dolphins, who have now won back-to-back games, and the previously undefeated Niners and Patriots are on losing streaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dolphins have the longest winning streak in the AFC East. I read that this week. I thought that was funny, and I think they've covered five games in a row.
That's a fact.
I think they're too frisky, Doug. I think they're making a mistake. I thought the whole point of this was to get a top draft pick.
Yeah, I loved the Dolphins last week. I'm surprised I didn't tweet at you for a bonanza pick. You know, it's a true test if you go down your pick 'em and you're clicking your teams, you just don't even hesitate with the Dolphin that a game. Like, you should probably think that's like a good pick if you don't even hesitate.
How about Adam Vinatieri misses the extra point? So they go up 12-10. Vinatieri missed the extra point, and then Miami goes back down the field, kicks a field goal to go up 13-12. Can you imagine if that had been the final score? The Colts might have had to move on from Vinatieri there.
They should anyway. Him. Yeah, I mean,
no,
he's
I
done.
Know. They should anyway. Athletes can only play for so long. Even kickers, they're still athletes. You can't play sports at a high level forever.
Well, this is like the Jason Garrett thing. You're doing all these other things to give your team the best chance to win, but then you're letting, I don't know, awkwardness, emotion factor into the. It's just not right. You can't have this charity roster situation.
No.
Look what Who was the kicker last week? Oh, the Niners kicker. They got that guy off the street and the mean streets of kickers, and then
he's banging
field goals. Like, Vinatieri
can't do
anything.
Watching him kick, it made me laugh thinking about teams that invest high draft picks in kickers. They basically just found this guy somewhere. Hey, you want to kick some balls for us? Buffalo, Miami, we're going to need Miami. I mean, I know that Miami's playing well, but the public loves these -6 road favorites. Buffalo is still a team with a 6-3 record. Miami 2-7, I think. The public will definitely be on Buffalo here, and we'll need the Dolphins.
That's something you've been saying. I just got to clip that. We'll need the Dolphins. at 7 is very
Yeah, tough. I mean, not as much as we used to.
Right.
You know, people have noticed the fact that they've covered 5 games in a row. They're not running to the window to fade Miami blindly as much as they were. But I do expect to need Miami by kickoff.
That makes sense. I don't think people are running to back the Bills, yeah. All right.
No one's running to back that Buffalo offense on the road, giving up almost a touchdown, is not exactly enticing either.
Highest profile game of that early kickoff, Ravens hosting the Texans. Really good matchup with two quarterbacks in the MVP discussion.
Yeah, it's a great game. This is definitely the best morning game for sure. We've got Baltimore -4, down from 4.5 opening number. Most of the money is on Baltimore, but, you know, Houston's been tough in this spot the last few years as a road underdog. This is really where they've played their best football. They already won at the Chargers and at the Chiefs this season. Now they get a real test in Baltimore on Sunday. We don't want to see Lamar Jackson win the MVP. I'll tell you that much.
You guys have a lot of big tickets out there?
We do. It's not as bad as Joe Burrow is going to be in the Heisman, but we don't want Lamar Jackson to win the MVP. Lamar Jackson crushed us, I think, what was that, 3 years ago when he won the Heisman. And now he's got a chance to do it again here, get us again with an NFL MVP award. It's pretty amazing. You consider how young he is.
I think he
can be the NFL.
Yeah, no, he's spectacular. We'll see. I mean, Russell Wilson, obviously a big win the other night.
Yeah.
I like the over in that game. That's probably my favorite play of the weekend.
Yeah, we're at 51.5. Nothing really to report. There's a lot of tickets on the over, but that's not really anything unusual. High-profile game. Usually the public's going to come in on the over. Nothing noteworthy there.
Arizona at San Francisco. Niners coming off the loss. We got to check the status of Kittle, Emmanuel mm-hmm. Sanders, and the Cardinals just keep covering, man. I love this team. They've covered 5 of 6 now.
Yeah, and everybody's betting the Cardinals. It's funny, you know, we opened this game 13.5 last Sunday. We had a look-ahead number of 14. We're down to 10.5. A couple of reasons. The injuries you just mentioned from San Francisco, they finally lost on Monday night, and the Cardinals keep covering in this spot, these road underdog spots. They've been very successful here for bettors. They did it last week. They covered at Tampa Bay. Remember, they covered a big number in Baltimore early in the year.
And they just played them at home and covered a big number.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. These two teams just played, what, 2 weeks ago today?
Yeah, on a Thursday.
And the Cardinals covered that game, too. So Arizona, they've been getting a lot of points. They haven't been winning a lot of these games, but they've been keeping them close. Maybe that's part of Kingsbury's reasoning for kicking all these 20-yard field goals, is to keep some games close and cover some spreads.
Yeah, I guess he's just still thinking about those boosters.
Always thinking about the boosters, man. That guy, he gets it. He gets it.
All right, so I got a question for you, because the next game is the big one, the Patriots at the Eagles.
Yeah, this is the big one.
With Belichick in New England, I'm going to tell you they've lost 74 regular season games. Okay?
Okay.
How many covers do you think he has the week after one of those losses?
So of 74. Out of 74?
This is off a bye and a loss, but.
I'll say 50.
Very close. 49-25 ATS off a loss.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. We're going to need him to add another loss to that record, though, because I can tell you the Saints are going to be a huge liability, but I think New England will end up being the biggest liability because of the time slot, that afternoon, 1:25 local time in Las Vegas. All the people that win their 10 a.m. bets are going to come to the window to double down on the Patriots. We see this all the time. Last week it was the Rams. This week it's going to be the Patriots.
It is fascinating. This game, for me, it's always Patriots or pass, just given this. I mean, they've covered 70% of their games since the start of 2016 or whatever that crazy number is. It's just, he's a machine. There's just better things to do with your money. Now, I agree that the Ravens were the right spot a couple weeks ago. For me, I think New England is actually a bet on spot right here.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly mistakenly gone against the Patriots many times over the years, but I've got no interest in backing Philadelphia here in this game. I would need more than 3.5. I don't trust the Eagles that much. New England is off a bye. I think New England has a ton of problems on offense. Their offensive line's not very good. Brady, not the player he was. I think we can say that safely. But certainly, I don't really want to get involved against Belichick any more than I need to.
Yeah. No, I'm not going there for the bonanza. I can't get involved with the Eagles, to your point. Now, this Raiders game I touched on, I think this number closes higher. Am I crazy to think it closes like 12.5, 13?
13 would be that's a pretty big stretch to think it would go up 2.5 points between now and Sunday. Not impossible, but there's not going to be a lot of people looking to back Cincinnati. I can tell you that much. I mean, right now, almost a 10-to-1 ticket count on your Raiders here.
That's my point. So I knew there would be ticket count. I didn't realize it would be 10-to-1. Yeah. And then it's that
425. Well, it's still early, but yeah.
425 kick. That's the a little bit later, right? Because the 405 mm-hmm. can sneak up on you. So you have the later kick. And obviously more people are betting that New England-Philly game. But I just feel like that Raider game, and I think you're going to have to get off some number. I think it's going to have to go up.
It wouldn't surprise me, and I know for sure we're going to need the Bengals pretty big.
Okay, two more games to get to. Let's go Sunday night. I think the Rams are now done. They're no longer a Super Bowl threat. Now, I mean, I'm almost there. It's just that was a bad situation. Goff, again, looks inept. I just can't trust this team.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing in the NFL how quickly the shine comes off of a coach or a player? I mean, Sean McVay a year ago was touted as like the greatest coach of all time. Just this footballing genius that could recall every play from 10 years ago. And now everyone's talking about Kyle Shanahan and his own division. And they've cast Sean McVay aside. And it's just crazy how much people overreact to everything. Sean McVay is a great coach. He was probably never as good as everybody made him out to be last year, but he's very good. But I don't know that he's got the players this year. Goff is nothing special. Gurley looks like he's washed up. The offensive line's not as good as it was last year. This is an older roster, and it's a much improved NFC West.
And I think this number's coming down. Rams right now, 6.5. I think it closes like 4.5, 4. I don't.
So we, this
not
is the
touching
pick.
7. Let me put it that way. It's not going to 7, even though there's
this
one.
This is the pick we gave Musburger Bears. Yeah. We all like the Bears here. Bears plus 6.5 was the super contest number. There is some 7-7 even out there on the Rams, if you're so inclined. But yeah, the Bears plus 6.5 was the pick we gave to Mr. Musburger. He said he liked it, and usually he doesn't like any of the picks I give him, but he told me he liked this one. He was very pleased with that offering. I think we'll need the Bears for a little bit here. There will be some Moneyline Parlay teaser action closing with the Rams. I also think this is going to be like a home game for the Bears. You know, the Bears fans, the Chicago fans are awesome. They travel. They support their teams big time. There's going to be a lot of Bears fans at the Coliseum on Sunday night.
I agree with everything you said. I like that line. And I do think it's coming down. I really do. I don't see how you're on a Sunday night game. I don't see how like there's going to be much Ram money at 6.5. I think this thing's 4.5. I've been wrong on a lot of these, you know.
A lot of injuries for the Rams too, DK. They got a couple of offensive linemen out.
Yeah.
Brandon Cooks is out. I mean, talk about the team you don't want to be missing offensive linemen against. The Chicago Bears, I mean, we make all of our jokes about Nagy and Trubisky, and we should. Those guys are doing a terrible job. But the Bears have studs all over that defense, especially that defensive front. You need all your offensive linemen at your disposal to block the Khalil Mack and the boys.
Yeah, I'm liking the under here even, too.
We got a total of 40 right now. We did see a little bit of money come in under 41 earlier in the week. We're at 40 right now on that total.
Copy. Okay, Monday night. Intriguing game, as it always is. Phillip Rivers, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I kind of like the Chiefs. I do on the Monday night road favorite here.
Yeah, the game's in Mexico City.
Damn it. I always get these wrong.
Well, I got my computer in front of me, and it says NFL Week 11 at Mexico City, so it's pretty easy for me. Kansas City minus 3.5. It's about a 3-to-1 count on the Chiefs here. We'll need the Chargers. Look like the Chargers got a little bit dinged up in their Thursday night game last week against the Raiders. I don't know how you can bet on the Chargers after seeing that play calling at the end of that game last week, by the way. That was atrocious beyond belief. But we will need the Chargers to cover here. I don't think it hurts them having a game on a neutral field at all, because if this game was in L.A., there'd probably be more Chiefs fans there than Chargers fans anyway.
How's the field going to be? Last year this game had to be moved.
I hope it's better than last year. haven't heard anything yet, but hopefully I think it's at Azteca Stadium, the great soccer stadium down there.
Yes,
hopefully
it is.
Hopefully they've fixed those issues and we can get this game in Mexico. But I don't think it really Like, I don't think the home field neutral thing plays into factors in at all. Because if this game was at the soccer stadium in L.A., it'd be all Chiefs fans there anyway.
I think I'm playing Chiefs team total over on Monday night.
All right. Chief, I mean, you see that jump pass that Patrick Mahomes made?
Ah, yeah, Mecole Hardman.
Oh, my. Unbelievable, man. I can't disagree with anyone backing anything to do with Patrick Mahomes.
He's legit.
The only player that like I consider appointment viewing in the NFL. If he's playing, I want to see what he can do, what he's doing. He's just such a special player. It's fun to watch him.
Yeah, I forget. Last year, some writer said that he's the new he's the NFL Steph Curry, and it kind of makes sense.
I mean, Lamar Jackson is a great player too. I said this when I was on with Humans the other day. I mean, Lamar Jackson's an unbelievable player. He's appointment viewing too, but we've seen other great running quarterbacks. We've ever seen anyone that can make the kinds of throws that Mahomes makes. The stuff he does just leaves us shaking our head.
That is a fact. All right, let's get to it, my friend.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
You know, there's an old saying that an accountant told me once. Pigs stay fat, hogs get slaughtered. And I should have bought out of my big position on the Niners, but the drop touch, I mean, I'm thinking they should be up 14-0. Finally, it's going to get away from them, and then, oh no. Drops, turnovers. We had a defensive score for each team as well.
Well, it was 10-0 San Francisco, and it seemed like Seattle couldn't do anything. Then all of a sudden, Jadeveon Clowney scores a defensive touchdown. Seattle scored two more touchdowns off of turnovers that led to short fields for them. The Niners got a defensive touchdown of their own. Crazy game. Hard to say that Seattle wasn't the right side. Not a good game for the books, I'll tell you that much.
So everyone on the dog there, huh?
I heard, I was listening to VSiN the other day, and I heard another sportsbook director around town say that it was a seven-figure loss for his operation on that game.
Yeah, I saw that too, Nick Bogdanovich at William Hill. So, yeah.
It was a very, I mean, now obviously William Hill's got huge volume with all their properties, but still I think that's a noteworthy loss for sure.
I would agree with that. Okay, my friend, you went 1-0-1. Excuse me, 0-1-1. I apologize. 0-1-1.
I was going to say, I'll take that 0-1-1, but yeah, 0-1-1. That's a respectable NFL week, I would argue.
A lot of entertainment. One loss.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what do you like here?
You know, I'm only going to play one game. There's only one game I really like this week.
Taking a knee in the bonanza, huh? Making me.
You want me to? You know what? I'll give you two. I'll give you. The only play I really like is Chicago, and I'll just take the 6.5. That's what we have here at the Westgate. +6.5. I'll do that one. Here's what I'll do. I'll do that one for 1,000 instead of my standard 500. So give me Bears +6.5 for 1,100 to win 1,000.
So I was thinking about this. I might have to fire some parlays.
Oh my God!
Three team.
that's your comeback strategy. I don't know that. That's I don't easy. Know that. That's
pause you had. The oh my God.
Do you want me to read off some hold percentage numbers for how we do on parlays versus straight bets?
I'm kidding. Right. So I'm gonna. So I like the Bears. I like the Raiders. I like the Chiefs team total over. I like the under in the Bears game. This might be a Bears and under. You guys allow correlated parlays, right?
Yeah, I mean, we let you do. We let you do +6.5 to under 40. That'd be okay with me.
Doesn't
I'm
the public
okay with that.
Do those a lot? Same side in total and.
I mean, the sharper guys they'll try to do that for like the first half, like they'd +3.5 to under 20. That'd be something we'd be less excited about accepting.
Right.
But yeah, we could do. I'd give you +6.5 to under 40. I wouldn't want to give it for a huge amount of money to a wise guy, but I could look the other way on it.
So that requires approval. The first half stuff
how
I
much,
get.
Depending on how much money you bet, you'd probably be looking for approval.
So Joe Schmo with his app at home in Nevada could not just do like a could do a $50.
No, he could do it. No, he could do it. He could do it. Yeah, it would go through.
Gotcha. Good. It's interesting to know. Not many people listening have those options, so it's good to know.
We would not let you do Ohio State to the over. I'll tell you that much. That would be. we would say no, sir, to that one. People will throw a fit when you tell them they can't do that. They'll that's a very, very extreme example. But over the years, I've seen other games that were very correlated, not that correlated, but very correlated. And I tell the guy that we were not accepting that bet. And so I thought this was Las Vegas. It's like, it is Las Vegas, but I'm not going to let you parlay minus 21 to over 40, buddy. I mean, come on, give me a break.
So with that Ohio State example, you're basically saying you're giving an alt line of minus 55.5 plus 260.
I mean, if Ohio State covers, the game's going to go over. Well, let's be honest here.
Right, but it's basically an alternate line plus 260. That's what you're doing for like 3 points away. Yeah.
Basically, if you can bet that, I would recommend doing it.
I think my bet of the weekend, by the way, in that game is Rutgers first half team total under.
Rutgers first half team total under. I can't even do the math.
They're not going to score. It's going to be like two.
It's a yes no price. It's not a
yeah. They're not scoring first half.
Probably not. No.
So that'll be my best bet on Friday in the show. Okay, back to the bonanza. I'm on the Bears for a nickel. You're up again.
Yeah, I'll give you one other one just because I'm a guy that loves to have fun on the podcast. I like this one, and I'm going to play by our rules because my good friends at Caesars and the South Point are currently dealing the Colts at minus 2.5. We said we could use any plays that are available in Nevada. So I'll do 550 to win 500 on Colts minus 2.5, courtesy of Jeff Davis at Caesars and Jimmy Vaccaro at the South Point.
I am more than okay with that. I thought you were setting yourself up like you're going to only take the three in your shot.
No.
Of course.
No. Like I said last week, I don't want us to start using like offshore books in New Jersey and stuff. But anything that's available in Nevada is fair game.
I might have to get Mike Clay's props in here because he's 5-0 last week, and I like his plays this week. So maybe we'll have to do that on Twitter. Listen, Mike Clay's coming up momentarily. But I will do –
Doug, just – I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're coming up on Thanksgiving, which means the night before Thanksgiving, I'll be out of town with my good friend, the Prince of Props. I'm sure he's going to want me to tweet out a play on one of those three Thursday games. I'll be flying back to D.C. here in a couple of weeks for Thanksgiving. Looking forward to that.
I think we've discussed it on the pod, but what was his reaction last year when I sent him the shot of his prop on SportsCenter when I gave it out as my pick?
Oh, man, he was loving it. Are you kidding me? He was thrilled.
I mean, that
he
should be thrilled, like his Facebook photo.
And I know that he's a very private man, but I know that I have a feeling we're going to have a few drinks that Wednesday night. Just a hunch. And I think we'll come up with a pick while we're together that night.
I unfortunately can't. I have a show Thursday morning, but then I'm done. Done for until Sunday, so that's good. So I'm going to do the Chiefs team total. What are we looking at? Is it up yet? You guys don't have it up yet. I'm looking at another book.
Well, yeah, we usually will put those up the day of the game.
It should be 27.5.
52.5. That sounds about right. 27.5. Yeah. 27.5 is fine. Yeah, that's good.
I mean, it's not going to be 28. It might be juiced, but we don't know the juice. Like, that's the problem.
Right. I mean, we'd either use 28 or 27.5. 27.5 is good.
Okay. What juice you want to give me, Mr. Director?
No, we'll give you minus 110. Okay. We'll give you minus 110.
For a dime. We'll do that for a dime. Okay. And a lot of Twitter play coming. We might have to try for a middle again.
I'm looking forward to it. And actually, I'll say that the primetime games again this week, the game tonight's pretty interesting. The Monday night game's a good game, and then I got action on the Sunday night game. So I can't make my weekly jokes about how bad the primetime games are, because this week they're not that bad.
You know what? I have more plays. We'll do another nickel on the Bears game under.
Okay.
Are there any 40
we have a total. Let me see. Yeah, we got to go everywhere. Yeah, there's plenty of 40 and a half. 40 and a half at a number of books in Nevada.
And I'll do the Raiders for a nickel. I'll lay the 10.5. I think that line's moving.
Yeah, I don't see any 10. So you're looking at Raiders minus 10.5 for 500.
Okay.
You or Travis better be accounting all this stuff.
Yeah, we got it. I got four plays. We got it. You got two plays, a dime on the Bears. And nickel
I trust you guys, man. I trust you.
I think your lead is sizable enough. You don't have to worry about it.
Hey, there's a long way to go, man. I mean, the NFL season just drags on forever. It's like it's about half the length of the Premier League season, which is very long. Half of a Premier League season is a long season.
All right, my man. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the weekend, you World Series champ. I hope it's you're still on that magic carpet ride, and
lots
to talk about next week. I'm dying to see how this Northwestern spread turns out, as well as the Ohio State one.
Yeah, looking forward to Saturday. I think there's some pretty good games on Saturday, Georgia Auburn especially, and the games on Sunday not bad. We'll definitely be watching that Ravens Texans game Sunday morning, and rooting for the Bears on Sunday night, and obviously, of course, rooting against the Patriots like we have been doing for, I don't know, 20 years.
Let's see how the line movement that I predicted pans out between now and kickoff on Sunday. All right, my man. Have a good one.
All right, buddy. Take care.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Nerd alert!
Mike Clay back for more. And, dare I say 5-0 last week, Michael?
I know. Man, we're keeping it alive. We were hot coming in the last week. But, the elusive perfect week. And I don't know if I could do that again, Doug. But we're going to try. We're going to do our best here.
Come on. What did they say in The Rock? Try? Losers try their best. Winners,
but listen,
they go home and, you know.
But we get it, though, right? This is all probabilities. Like, whatever. Like, if you go 0-5, you're like, oh, that's just bad luck. You go 5-0, probably a little good luck. So, but again, we're looking for 4-1,
but,
you know.
But I want to attack some of that, because there's a lot of like, well, that's just very, like, you can kind of hide behind some of that stuff.
But it is true.
Yeah.
You should add context, even when you're right. Like, even last week, sometimes you're going to get lucky, and you have to be aware of that so you can adjust in the future and you know, reduce the variance as much as
right.
you can.
Right, so, like, you had a touchdown for Heath Hendry
last
Thursday, and that is not like, hey, I know they're just like, look, the math of it suggests there's value here. Like, that I'm with you. Like, there is an explanation, win or lose, on that.
You can make a good bet and lose, and vice versa.
Totally.
You can make a bad
bet. But there's a lot of bad bets that you lose. People are like, well, that's variance. I'm like, nah, that's so fast.
No, sometimes it was a bad process. There's no question about it. Nobody has a perfect process either, but you can fine tune it to the point that you're okay missing sometimes because you went the right way and the ball just didn't bounce the right way.
Just like I've had a million bad bets that were just like bad process and, you know, some of the handicapping component to it all. I just think sometimes, people hide behind stuff.
There's no question about it. It's easy to. But there's some times where I'm right and people are like, good call. And I'm like, oh, man, I got lucky. You know, he had a bad day but caught a 75-yard crossing route or slant and went the distance for a touchdown and what they went over. But that's all he had. You know, and I feel lucky even though it hit.
And then overtime on Monday night, got some overs like Chris Carson's rushing yards prop, things like that. So.
Yeah, that wasn't me.
No. But that went over.
Oh, right. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. That wasn't one of ours. I think we had a legit five last week.
No. You had a legit. The Henry was a little value play, and then the other four were solid.
Yeah.
Solid handicapping, and a lot of them were connected. So, all right, my man. Well, let's turn the page.
Let's do it.
What have you done for me lately, world? And you got one prop for tonight.
I do. Vance McDonald, over 3.0 receptions in this one. I'm surprised. Usually the catch totals are like 2.5, 3.5. This one's straight at 3. But I think he's going to get to 3 in this one. He actually only averaged 3.5 targets per game during his first 5 full games this season. But he's handled 7 targets now in 2 straight games with Mason Rudolph back in there and healthy. He played 90% of the snaps and ran a route and 90% of the pass plays during that span. He's averaging 3.4 catches per outing during his past 7 full games, and then you look at Cleveland, they're allowing a 72% catch rate. That's 6th highest to tight ends, and McDonald has been efficient at the very least, a 71% catch rate this season. So I expect him to be in that 6-8 target range again where he's been, and if that's the case and he keeps up that 70% catch rate, then he should hit four catches in this game. I think 3 is probably worst case.
Really? So even in this kind of new offense where all those pop passes behind the screen, now I know
that's probably good for him.
It's evolved, obviously, since that first performance against the Bengals, I think it was, on Monday night. But I just don't trust Mason Rudolph. Like, I don't at all.
Yeah, well, he's been conservative, but that's okay for Vance. Like I say, he's been going his direction. 14 targets over his past 2 games, and his catch rate has been low the past 2 weeks. But, you know, based on his career and Rudolph's passing efficiency, I think that's just a little bit of bad luck in there. So, I think if he hits that target number, if I told you right now he's going to have 7 targets tonight, you're going to jump on the, you know, 3-3 or, you know, over 3, I think. So, I do like this one. I think you'll get there.
Okay. Let's go to Sunday. You had some bonus plays not in the primetime slots. You've earned that right, obviously, going fine. So let's give me a little Fitz magic here.
Yeah, we did some of this last week, too, they hit. So let's keep it going. Fitz under 1.5 passing touchdowns here at minus $1.10. Fitzpatrick, 8 touchdowns in 7 full games this season. He's only averaging 1.14 per game and has either 0 or 1 passing touchdowns in 5 of those outings. And then you look at the Bills on the other side. They've allowed 7 passing touchdowns this season. That is third fewest in the league. They've allowed fewer than 2 passing touchdowns, which of course would be the under here, in 8 of 9 games this season. The only exception was actually that Browns game when last week. They only gave up 19 points in that game. Bills pass defense, tremendous under Sean McDermott. Third fewest passing yards allowed this season, the third lowest yards per attempt, 7 lowest completion rate. They've just delivered in that department. And again, I looked this up. I was like, is this, you know, it seems like it's been an ongoing trend with Sean McDermott since he's been there. And it is. The Bills have allowed 43 passing touchdowns in 41 regular season games under McDermott. That in 2017, of course, that's 3 less than the next closest defense. So it's again, you know, just the defense from 2 years ago really matter? Maybe not, but the scheme probably does. And McDermott does not allow passing touchdowns, and it's continued each and every year he's been there.
That's a fair point. I'm glad you had that qualifier. The problem is there is an element of randomness that bothers me with some of these props. Mm-hmm. Like, and look, that's gambling. I get it. Okay, I get it. But to me, some of the yards props, I personally am more comfortable with than passing touchdowns props.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Is there more randomness in the passing touchdown?
The thing with yards that bothers me is they're easier to get on a fluke play, right? You can. There was one we did. It's going back because it was Will Disley, I remember. And I had the under. It was like under 52 yards or something like that. And he caught. He had like no catches over 12 yards all season. And then suddenly had 2 20-yard catches right in a row at the beginning where he was just left wide open. And then nothing the rest of the game, but it was too late. He had like 2 short catches and went over. You know, so you can have one pop play. Like I mentioned earlier, too, like just those one pop plays can really ruin a yardage prop, even if it was a good call. So,
I guess it's just a comfort level. All random. That's why the point spread's there in the conventional gambling space. And then the props, it's just maddening at times. On the passing touchdown thing.
Yeah.
I think that's what gets me. I feel like the yards, rushing yards, I feel to me is the most true sort of predictor.
Mm-hmm. No, rushing yards are, running backs are one of the, like I do fantasy a lot, right? Running backs are the easiest because you can project the most volume, right? Some of them guys are going to get 15, 20 touches. Some of them, you know, are going to get 4 or 5. So it's easier to rank those guys as opposed to receivers.
And in college, you get the 90-yard bomb breaking runs, and very rarely do you have that in the NFL. Sometimes
yes.
Barkley
yes.
gets loose. Derrick Henry last year had famously against the Jaguars, but mm-hmm. usually you don't have those monster runs that just skew all the yards.
No question. Yeah, I like as a fan, you like the crazy games where they're all over the place. As a prognosticator, you like the ones that go about right, you know, when the score is almost exactly what you predicted and there's no crazy plays. Those ones, your projections will look pretty good.
Okay, so you're hoping for more Fitz tragic than more Fitz magic.
No, I think he could play fine and just not throw a lot of touchdowns because he hasn't thrown many this season, and the Bills just do not allow passing touchdowns. So I think the under is the safer play here.
Okay, you have another play in that game.
I do. It was kind of surprising these two jumped out, but it's Kalen Ballage. And if it's anything Kalen Ballage, I'm going under. This is going back to the pre-draft process for sure. The line is 50.5 rushing yards here. Now, Ballage has appeared in 21 NFL games so far. He's cleared 19 rushing yards in a game 3 times, and the only time he went over 50 yards was an untouched 75-yard touchdown run that he had last season in Week 15. That was the only time he's gotten to 50 yards so far. Now, look, they traded Kenyon Drake. Mark Walton suspended, so he played 88% of the snaps last week. 88%, which is workhorse, like Le'Veon Bell territory usage. His answer, 73 yards and 20 carries and 2 yards on 4 receptions. Now, I'm almost always going to just chase volume with something like that. So if you told me a guy was playing that much and going to get that much volume, I would go over here. But this is an ongoing issue, again, going back to Arizona State. The guy is horribly inefficient, 2.05 yards per carry this season, less than a yard after contact. It will be shocking if his role is not reduced in this game. I'm at 41 yards, even against the Bills defense that you can actually run on this season, the 7th highest yards per carry allowed. I just can't imagine his role not being reduced.
So do they have another warm body back there that can spell him so he's not going to get that many touches?
They have Patrick Laird, who they like as the 2. They have Miles Gaskin. They drafted in the 7th round, and they brought in DeLance Turner from Baltimore a couple weeks ago. They're getting his feet wet. So, yeah, I can't.
So you expect the usage to come down there?
It has to.
Okay. Like,
and even if it doesn't, I still have him playing a bulk of the snaps here, and he still falls short because he's
20 carries, you should get the 50 yards.
Yeah, and he didn't last week. Right?
He said 73.
No. He had 43 yards and 20 carries and 2 yards on four catches.
Okay, I misheard you. I'm sorry. 43, not 73. Okay.
It's tough. I mean, one run where he gets a good block, he can get there, but I would bet against it. He's not good enough.
Well, I kind of like where you're going with that one. Okay. Allen Robinson on Sunday night.
Yes. Against the Rams, under 63.5 receiving yards here. Look, Robinson, even with Mitch Trubisky having a pretty horrendous year, he's been pretty good. He's cleared 63 yards in 5 of his 9 games, got to 60 in 2 others. His target share is huge at 27%. He's been at 21% or higher in all 9 games. So that's a little under 9 targets per game. So that's good, and that would maybe push you to lean towards the over. The problem, Doug, he's going to have his hardest matchup of the season this week, drawing the Jalen Ramsey shadow. And we saw what he did to Juju Smith-Schuster last week. We saw what he's done to opposing number one receivers throughout his career in this league. He held Juju to 3 catches and 44 yards last week. So Robinson, for me, comes in at 58 yards, which is actually feels optimistic to me. As somebody that's invested in him in fantasy, like I'm like 58 yards might be asking a lot when he's going to see Ramsey on probably all, maybe 90% of his routes in this game. So I definitely feel like this will be one of those down weeks here with Ramsey all over him.
Okay, Monday night.
Monday night, Damian Williams, here back to the touchdown well here. Let's go. Damian Williams, yes to scoring a touchdown at plus $1.05. Williams had double-digit touches for the first time as a Chief in week 14 of the 2018 season. Since that point, 14 touchdowns in 14 games for this Chiefs offense. That includes 4 touchdowns in 8 games this season, despite the fact that he was clearly the backup for a stretch behind LeSean McCoy. McCoy, no longer a factor. Healthy scratch last week. Williams had 24 touches and played a season-high 74% of the snaps in that game. That was 2 scores in his past 3 games. And by the way, since the beginning of the 2018 season, when Patrick Mahomes took over as a starter, Chiefs running backs have a league-high 33 total touchdowns, and they're playing a Chargers defense, by the way, that's allowed 11 touchdowns backs this season. That is 7th most. So a lot of reasons to think Williams will find his way into the end zone in this game.
Should I start him in fantasy?
I am, yeah.
Good.
I think so. You can't argue with that volume. And listen, you tell me you got running backs playing 70% of the snaps, getting 20 touches in a Mahomes offense. Thank you. Yeah, I'll take that.
I've been hoarding all these like guys on the Chiefs, hoping for kind of injuries, and now's my opportunity.
There you go.
All right, my man. Great stuff as always. Really appreciate your time.
All right, let's do it again. Thanks a lot.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
All right, that's going to do it for this podcast. We had a lot of edits for you, Travis. A lot of alarm sounding today.
Yeah, for the listeners, they're unaware because I did such an amazing job, but there was alarms going off at Murray's place of work throughout the podcast, so I had some edits to make today.
And the alarms were not a casino robbery, it was just the standard...
Yeah, I was a little upset. I was like hoping that like Ocean's 14 was going on or something, and like, all right, but it was just a test, and that's not fun.
No. It's the same guy. The guy's been going on for years. I mean, no turnover with the voice. The standard test. This is a test.
It's a good gig.
It is a good gig if you can get it. So thanks to everyone, Mike Clay as well, John Murray, and Travis for your disciplined editing, your tight editing to take out all the alarms. I mean, this taping took forever. It was an hour and a half-ish because of all the delays, and Murray had to call back. But that's what happens. That's the stuff we do for you, the listener. Thanks to everyone. Again, we'll see you back here next week.